Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we center the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation, these are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast. And today with me, I have the very lovely Dinda. And so welcome, Dinda.
Hi.
So tell
us.
You're very welcome. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Dinda. Where are you from? When did you come to New Zealand? And yeah.
Thank you again, Hafsa, for having me. So I'm Dinda, and I'm from Indonesia, and I've been living in New Zealand for 2 years now. I just graduated from the University of Canterbury just last April. And now I was actually a humanitarian storyteller for United Nations before in Indonesia and West Papua, and now I'm moving here, just continuing that I have been done before, trying to continue that I have been done before, and now I'm trying to get new either clients or jobs in New Zealand. So let's see. So that's a short introduction from me.
Nice. Thank you very much, Dinda. So what was your first day in New Zealand like when you came to New Zealand? What did it feel like? What do you remember?
I actually came to New Zealand on July 2023, and it was winter from what I remember. And I was so excited of the because I'm in Christchurch, and I was so excited of the Hagley Park. So I took like daily walk in Hagley Park, but I never done it again nowadays. It's too hard nowadays. But yeah, and one of the things that I remember, and also I checked the like some of my pictures in the gallery. I actually took a picture of broccoli, so it was like one of the highlights when I arrived here, because the price of broccoli in New Zealand is the same price as in West Papua. So it's like a mind-blown experience for me to see the price of broccoli and other grocery stuff, but especially broccoli.
Wow. So you took a photo of the broccoli in the supermarket.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And it reminds you, oh, it's the same price as in West Papua. Oh, okay. Yeah. So
would that be too expensive or, the average price?
Yeah, because I grew up in Jakarta, in the capital city of Indonesia, and everything was accessible, all vegetables or whatever, like any technologies, because it's a big city. Move to Papua was a big shock for me because vegetables were so expensive. And when I moved here, it's just a mind blown that the price in a remote area in Indonesia has the same value as in New Zealand. So that's why.
Mm.
It's a little bit shocking for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So I guess my next question is about why did you come to New Zealand? What was the thinking? What was the purpose?
So actually the reason why I choose New Zealand to currently, like, I'm trying to settling down actually. Well, not settling down, just settle. It's because my husband was already here. He been living in New Zealand for 6 years. He's not Kiwi, he's someone from the Northern Hemisphere, but also a white privileged guy. So that's why I came here. And I originally wanted to study in the UK to take any scholarship, but then because life and love say differently to me, so that's why I came here. I took a break from UNICEF for 2 years, and then I took the study here. And also because one of the major that I want to take is available in University of Canterbury, so it's kind of like a win-win. So yeah, that's why I came here, and I was hoping that I could also try an international experience in terms of career path. That was what I was aspiring before when I came here.
Yeah, so if I may ask a little bit about what you were studying at University of Canterbury.
Oh yeah. I took a Master of Strategic Communication, and most of the subjects that they offer actually mostly super useful for any communication people who work for nonprofit organizations, which that's what I experienced as well during my study. There were so many things that was so useful for my work. So yeah, that's why I took that major as well.
So yeah, so now you are you finish your degree. Nice. And so what was happening in your life before you came to New Zealand?
Just before I came to New Zealand, like I said before, I live in West Papua for 1 year as I work there as a social behavior change communication officer for UNICEF. And I travel all over Papua and all over Indonesia before that also, like for the last 7 years before I moved here. My life and my identity actually super tight with the United Nations works. So, and it's also because I didn't have time even for my, well, I did have time for my personal life, but because I was in productive age and I didn't want to miss anything. So my life was so busy working and working and working before, until I need to stop now and reflect more.
Nice. So you wanted to stop.
No, I don't want to stop, but the
You've got a
circumstances.
time, but you've got time to reflect now. Right. Yeah. So having been in New Zealand now 2 years, what are some of the things that you've noticed which are very different to what other places that you've been to or have known?
Being someone who come from a completely different cultural context, and there are like so many different, though I had like mostly international life before, but then I never live in completely English native social and cultural background before, so this is the first time. So it is already a di big different. And one of the cultural context that I needed to learn a lot was the small talk skill that I didn't have before, because I grew up in Jakarta in a big city. Like, I was super straightforward, just like people in the big city. I never asked, or I never said, "Oh, I love your dress. Oh, I love your necklace. Oh, I love your boots." I never done it before. But living here for 2 years, I got a lot of those small talks from Kiwi, especially. And apparently, it's the culture. And I know that I realized that it is actually connect people a lot as well. It's kind of like the opening part of whatever connection that you will try to build. And it's part of their culture here. So that's like the big difference as someone who come from a big city, though it is an Asia, one of city in Asia, and then here is like super Western. But yeah, that is the small talk. The first time I came here, I always like, "What do you want from me?" Because that's what, I mean, in a big city, if someone say something nice to me, I will think that they want something from me. Oh my God. And I will feel scared. That is like my initial reaction is always like, "Oh my God." But not here. People are so genuine in saying things nicely to you. And for me to start it, it's also like put me in a vulnerable position. What if people don't like it? What if so many what if, but it's only in my imagination somehow. But yeah, that's one of like the big cultural difference that I experience. I don't know if you experienced that as well.
No, and the way you put it, you know, I think we are in our cultures, we live in such a fast moving world, a lifestyle, we don't ask these simple questions. You know, how are you? Or even compliment someone sometimes. And, you know, there's always that hidden agenda that we are thinking of if someone says it's nice.
And it's scary. It's scary. Yeah. And also because English is not my first language, and I never been in New Zealand before. This is the first time it's the first time I came to New Zealand. And most of the time I spend my life holidays, long holidays in a global north. I never heard any Kiwi people talk. So accent in New Zealand is also different, I realized, the first times I came here. So it's also a new adjustment, especially when I go to coffee shop, when I need to hear whatever that they talk, whatever that they trying to say to me. So yeah, apparently, even though I'm fluent in English, apparently I'm not fluent until I come here. So,
whatever that means.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So tell me a little bit about the challenges you have faced so far in New Zealand.
Well, now I actually joined two different women organizations. One is like the Lady Khadija organizations, and then I met friends with them, and then I met friends with another like woman social organization from another hemisphere. But I realized that it's not only my challenge, but everybody challenge is finding a job, especially for women, because all of them are women. Those who I met from these two different organizations, they are women. And I really, after this graduation, I really want to go back to my career path because it's so tied to my identity to be a humanitarian storyteller, to speak on behalf of those who need it the most. Ideally, I want to continue my career in the UN, but then the world situations doesn't say that. So I need to stay here and I want to find a job here. Mm-hmm. I've been rejected by 8 organizations so far already. So that is my biggest challenge right now. I play around with my CV, I play around with my cover letter. One of my cover letters is pretending to be a ChatGPT, just telling this is Dinda, this is my new friend, blah blah blah, just being fun, but still get the rejection. And I don't know if they even read my cover letter and my CV or not due to my visa. That is my, which is fair for those who already get residence visa, for the Kiwi as well. It's fair that they get priority. It's fair enough. But because having a job, because having a career path is tied to my identity. So I feel the sink as a ship because it takes away my identity. So that's what I've been facing nowadays, to try to separate myself as a woman, being in a foreign country, living abroad, not having professional path. And also I hate the word supporting my husband because I don't know, it's just, I know that I need to support my husband, but he also needs to support me in a feminist ideal, you know, ideal word in my head. So it's super complicated already in my thought, and added by not having enough friends here, not having spider web here, not having support system here. So that's like being lonely. I want to talk to my friends in Indonesia, but the time zone difference also a big challenge as well. So yeah, I'm trying to accept the idea of, oh, okay, not tied my identity with whatever that I do for work. I myself, and also one of the sessions from the woman leadership training was to find our own self, our own voice, our own vision. So it's also helpful. I really like it. And it's, though it's a big challenge, I'm trying to, strive to face it. And maybe it's like what I said, it's time to find myself.
So the challenge of employment, I will say it's not probably related to, but it might be somewhat related to the visa status. But people like the woman I have spoken to as part of this podcast, they've been here long enough, but they still can't find the right job. So I think there is a more deeper challenge here than just a visa status. It can be a little bit more than that. But that is something we will have to explore and find solutions to together, I think. It is.
I actually have another. I don't know if this is. I will say it for now, and then we can think about it if we need to cut it or not. But my husband and I been thinking and reflecting about all of this 8 job application experience. Maybe I should put my husband's name at the end of my name, because when we got married, I decided to not having his name because I'm a woman. I'm an independent woman. I know I have a value of myself. But then, due to whatever circumstances happened here, I want to play around. Maybe having Walker at the end of my name will be helpful. I don't know.
I don't know the answer to that, and I'm not going to comment on
that. You better play around with it. I'll let you know.
Yeah, do let me know. Do let me know if that makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you decided not to have your husband's name. Was there a reason? Was that related to your cultural identity in terms of why you didn't want to add that? Or I know it's a very personal question, but I just want to know whether it was related to you keeping your cultural identity in place.
Yeah, it's first, yes, it's related to my cultural identity, because in Indonesia we don't use last name, and this is also part of my challenge when I created my PPH. Interior class, because we know there is no like formal or informal way that people use the last name of our father in our name, and nowadays they started to use it because of some influences from other countries, maybe from other cultures, but not in my family, not in where my father come from, not in where my mother come from. And also, I don't know if I'm wrong, but I also heard that because I was born in Muslim, and I remember, I think my mom ever said it, that you can only have your father's name as last name, not your husband's name, because it's not allowed in Islam. It's my understanding. But because when I get married, we had the wedding under like humanist ceremony, not in an Islam way, but also because it's never been in my culture, and I did my feminism idealistic. I just don't want to have any male's name in my name. So that's the answer actually. And yeah, in terms of like cultural identity, of course, I always want to have it with me. That's why I keep supporting Indonesian community here. And because they are also supportive with each other as well. I mean, most of the time in my experience. And because I come from Indonesia, and I mean, there is no harm to keep it with me. And for some of cultural things that I keep, like, what is it, just to be polite with old people, you know, that kind of, like, there is no equality between young people and old people in Indonesia. It's always not equal. Like, old people is always right. So that's the thing that one of the culture that I love the most, that I don't find it quite equal here. So yeah, that's how important ish cultural identity for me, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned about you know, the people who are older than you are always right. I think that's a cultural thing in Southeast Asia, all of Southeast Asia, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Just say yes to them.
Do what I say.
Yes. Never challenge them. Which is like, yeah, I can understand you you live longer than me. You experience a lot than me. So I need to respect you. I mean, which I don't find it in the same vibe, in the same way with the understanding of my husband and his family. So, yeah.
And, you know, you have mentioned about the work that you were doing in West Papua and, you know, all the other work that you've done. And you did say that, you know, you joined your husband here who was already here in New Zealand. My question is around, do you at any point in time, like over the past 2.5 years and now that you're trying to find a job, do you feel that you have lost anything by immigrating here?
Yeah.
And what would that be?
No, definitely I lost everything. I lost my career, definitely. I mean, because I left UNICEF when my career was like in the peak moment, I would say. And I had a big farewell when one of the biggest person in UNICEF Indonesia said something beautiful about me. And it thinks that, you know, when you did something great and then you need to let it go, it's super difficult for me. So career, definitely one of the things that I give up. And well, maybe in the future I will take it back, but not for now. I really need to let it go. And friendship as well, because I had so many friends in Indonesia. And we bound by trauma, by a lot of good things as well. And there's nothing can exchange it here. So that's also like things that I, like friendship is one of the biggest things that I give up as well. And recently, I actually, speaking of friendship and then career path that I need to give away, I had aha moment actually recently, because I do bouldering, wall climbing indoor climbing. So in bouldering, the gym will always reset the boulder. Well, like whatever boulder problem that you do, that you have done, they will reset it in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks. You need to let it go. So one day I was driving to the climbing gym thinking about this one of like the biggest problem that I had in the climbing gym. And I did it in a good way, in a nice way, but I know that, oh, they will change in 2 days. Oh, but then I was like, it's just the same with my career path, actually. Like, I, as long as I remember, I had a good time, I accomplished a lot, I accomplished enough, I have done good enough, so I can let it go. So I think bold, like this sport also helped me to move on in some way, because I've been doing a lot of problems in bouldering, and then I need to let them go. So that's why it's easier for me to let go other things in my life right now. Though these past 2 years, it's so difficult for me to deal with. But yeah, I think sport also helped me here to cope.
Yeah, because those are very interesting things about things changing. And you having to rebuild yourself by starting pretty much from scratch or from wherever you are. But, you know, because I remember when I came to New Zealand, the same thing happened with me. All the work that I did in and wherever I was in India, in the corporate sector, it didn't help. And you know, I've spoken about it in the past as well. Being in the management position, coming here, applying for about 300 jobs, not hearing back, and then starting at pretty much all from scratch as whatever I could. So that I think has been a bit of a challenge for a lot of people as well. Have you, and this is just out of curiosity, are you volunteering with any organizations here in New Zealand?
Yeah, I actually currently I'm volunteering. Well, this is still in the process. I'm trying to become a mentor for one of foundations in Christchurch. There's like mentor and mentee program for children whose parents are in prison, because I have a tough childhood as well. So I feel like this organization resonates with me a lot, and I think this is time to give back as well to the community while I have time. Like I have a lot of free times, and I'm currently doing like some freelancing for video production for nonprofit organization, because I only want to work for nonprofit organization just because it's my value just because of that. And I did volunteering with one of a cycling community, but not anymore. RAD, if you know that. They're also like, they have
Yes.
like very friendly environment for volunteering. And yeah, and I'm just busy trying to, what is it, have a another growth opportunity by joining like your course and also Terreo course. Oh, and I was speaking with someone from French, interestingly from French. She's also ha having the same, like similar experience as me. And we were, because both of us have the same background, we are working for a multimedia industry. So we're thinking, oh, maybe it's worth to just start from zero again, to be maybe like apply for admin job, apply for graphic design, whatever, like starting from zero. But also another consideration is, how do we balance it to co keep collecting our portfolio for the next couple of years, because it's also like wasting time in a way to not
Yes.
collect portfolio. So that's I want to see it as an another opportunity just to start from zero, but also balance it with a way that I can collect more portfolio.
Good, good. I think that's a good approach to doing stuff here. But again, I guess with the not-for-profit sector also, the opportunities are also quite limited, isn't it? Because it's a small country at the end of the day, New Zealand. Anyways, I hope you do find something that aligns with what you want to do and continue your work there. So, I think the other set of questions for me is around what I think from the conversation we were having, I want to ask you about your social connections. You've spoken about your social, you're doing some volunteering with these organizations. Has that helped you to build some social connections or some friendships? Or is it still like it's work in progress and you're still trying to find the right people to,
Yeah, like that, I studied 1 year in the university, right? And I only make friends with some international, like keep contact and like keep making friends with some international students. And the thing with making friends, because I need to be open, I need to put my vulnerability, I need to be compassionate as well. All of this together, combined with different cultural contexts, that's what I found it so difficult to navigate as well. And I think by volunteering, because even like the volunteering that I did like with a longer time with that cycling community, because a lot of time people also don't understand my accent, so that's also another barrier I think to make friends. But by doing my hobby, which is climbing, cycling, that lead me to more friendship. And also I realized there are more international group of friendship that I can join, as long as I reinstall my Facebook. I think that's one of the key. Get back your Facebook account. When you move to New Zealand, by the time you move, just reinstall your Facebook account. Get it back, because everything is on Facebook here. So that's one of the things that helped me to find friendship as well, I think. apart from volunteering, not necessary in my opinion. I don't know why.
Interesting. Interesting. Very interesting. Because some of the women I had spoken to mentioned that, you know, by volunteering, they were able to build some social connections, you know, the spider web that you were talking about.
Yeah, for me, it's the sport, the hobby. Yeah, not necessarily volunteer. Oh, maybe I need to try more volunteering. I don't
know. No, sport is good too. Sport is good too, yeah. Because, you know, you said you do bouldering and then you're doing some work with RED around because they're focused on bicycling, right?
Yeah, and they also give like cycling course for migrant women, I think.
Oh, that's good. So I guess my next question is around, I know you said that you have found it a little bit challenging to make some friends. So some of the people that you have spoken to, have they mentioned it, that they've had similar challenges?
Yep. Even this is like across nationality, to be honest. Yeah, I would say it's across nationally because I met friends with, some of new friends are from, again, French, the US, people from the UK, I don't think they found difficulties to find a job here. It's like, I don't know. Not from what I heard, but from other nationalities, and all are women, and then they all have expertise already, and it's quite niche. And also we come from what you said, with a good portfolio, high quality type of job, and also managerial level. So that's what the real difficulty is, where the challenge is to find the position here that is fit to you. But I think I'm starting to be kind to myself as well, and to I accept the idea of starting from zero again. I don't mind anymore, as long as it will bring me to the right path again. I don't mind. I think.
Yeah, and I think that's the key here is and I'm glad you said you're trying to be kind to yourself, because one of the things that happens is that sometimes when it gets really tough, we do get to that point where we are becoming very critical of ourselves as well.
I mean, last night, not because of these questions, but it's just because some of I just read this question like thoroughly this morning, to be honest. But last night, because also I had like a couple of social meetings last couple of days, and I heard like someone from the UK already get a job in like 2 months, in 3 months, and it's from the university. So it's just, you know, I'm being honest, I'm envy of her. I'm so envy of her because all of the rejection that I got. And last night I did like a mistake that nothing to do with the job, nothing to do with anything, just a small stupid mistake that I did, and it cost $169 only. I mean, because I don't have financial difficulties, because fortunately my husband work in a good way. I mean, in a good position right now, so we don't have financial difficulty. But that $169 mistake made me blame myself, made me cry. I said I'm such a failure. Even this is small thing, but this is a mistake. Maybe I'm not worth it at all. At the end, maybe I'm not smart. I'm not smart anyway. Maybe that's why people don't pick me. You know, all of those blame. Like, I mean, being honest with you, last night I crashed and I cried with my husband. I said I just want a job. I really really want a job. That's what I said.
Oh
yeah, I don't know what happened to me. I think it's this enviness, and then not being kind to myself and not appreciate that what I've done. I think that's what happened. But again, so I think this is not the first time I get a down moment, but this is like super, it was super super down. But I, to be honest, not to what is it? Not to being nice to the Lady Khadijah organization, but I look at some of the modules again and some of the notes that I made, and it's helpful, honestly. That's why I remember to be kind to myself, because I think one of us said it in the class.
Yeah, no, I'm giving you a virtual hug from here, and I'll give you a face-to-face one when we meet. But I think that is one of the most important things, that sometimes you do get overcritical of yourself, and then you start to say things to yourself that you don't want to. I was listening to a TED talk recently, and it was I think it was one of the initial TED talks by Mel Robbins, and she made some very regardless of the full TED talk and whether I agree with her or not, that's a different thing. But she made a very good point, which I really liked. And she said, none of us would talk to or be friends with someone the way we talk to ourselves.
That's true, actually.
I was like, oh, that is true. That is true too. Because we sometimes get so critical in terms of just, and these are hard challenges, trying to come and set ourselves up in a new place. There is a set of video documentaries we did when Lady Khadija trusted, called Immigrant
Okay.
Journeys.
I'll check it.
And as a part of that, one of our participants who we interviewed, Shubha Narayan, I still remember that when we would, and the whole crew would go, because I was the exec producer, and then we had a videographer and a photographer who were covering these stories. And one of the things that there was part of this was the journey of migration, coming to New Zealand and settling in. And she made this very interesting point about when she was leaving India, she asked her grandma, what advice she would give. And Shubha's grandmother at that time, she said, because she was quite mature when she moved to New Zealand, she moved with her two children, quite grown-up children. So her grandmother said to her, it's like you are uprooting a full-grown tree and trying to move it and plant it in a new place. So you have to be very resilient to be able to take that whatever comes your way before you learn. You have so some of us who understand plants, I don't know if you do, but even I don't have that much knowledge. But it's like a full-grown tree. You're uprooting it and replanting it. So it takes a lot of courage as well, I think. So number one, you are courageous, Dinda, to take that move. So I think that is one of the most important things to remember. And all of these challenges that you are encountering, when you listen to the podcast, it's gonna come out in until the episodes come after one after another. You will hear these stories from other women, and you will connect with a lot of these stories, I'm thinking, because everyone's had a different challenge, or maybe similar. You might think that. So you're not alone, is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you. Yeah, I will watch them. No, I think this couple of weeks after I joined the course, and I also expand my wings to another international woman international organization. I think that feeling of not being alone, like I'm not alone. It's just not only me. This is just the situations. Everybody else also experience it. That is help a lot. But because I'm such a high achiever, and I always achieve things that I want, and I never been kind to myself before. So I think that's why I think I push myself too much already.
Yeah, that's the problem with overachievers. I am one of those as well, and I know what you mean. And I had gone through that frustrating period in my life when I wasn't able to achieve what I wanted to. But I think what I started to do was reframe the whole conversation again and go, I'm still achieving, but it's a new environment and a new setting for me, which is not in my favor, but I need to try, and whatever I achieve is success here.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, thanks for that.
So, and you know, you're never starting from zero because you're always starting with experience. So, you know, all the amount of experience that you have and the work that you've done, because I've had a look at
Thank you
your
so much.
work is just incredible with UNICEF. So when you are starting here, I know it's like starting at zero, but then it's like starting with so much experience there, and the right time will come when it'll just fly for you in terms of that, which is always hard because you know you're trying to settle here and trying to make sense of this place.
Yeah, I think the faith that I need to find it again. I don't know where, but I don't know where from, but yeah.
Yeah,
But so
so
far, at least, I mean, you with the organization provide the tools already. So I'm so grateful. The fact that I get it for free as well.
yes, that's why we try and
I'm
get our
so grateful.
funders. Yeah. Thank you, funders. I think that's what we need to say.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think it's super meaningful. You know what I mean? There are so many, even me, when I work for UNICEF, for like empowering like children or young people, I think this program is like, again, not trying to say nice things, but really this is like something that straightforward and really useful tools that even someone like me who already have a lot of international experience really need it, apparently. So yeah, it's
Oh, that is nice. That is nice to hear, Dinda. That's very nice. So I guess then I think the last couple of questions that I have before, because we do have a time limit on our conversation. So my question to you is, how will you describe the life in New Zealand to someone back in Indonesia or wherever you have spent majority of your life?
I think, okay, I prepare my notes. The first thing that I wrote is I'm not the right person to say that life in New Zealand is tough because I'm really sure you've been hearing this from other like immigrant women. Not for me, because since first I marry a white guy, so all of my underprivilege is washed off by him. So I'm not underprivileged anymore. I don't have like super difficulties to starting my life here. Even right now, I don't have a job, but I can still do my hobbies. I can still find growth in myself. So I think, but I do know some people who come from similar background, who come here with like similar economic background, similar like from equal economic background of home countries and also culturally, I know that they used to and then they have tough life and then they need to strive to keep living in New Zealand. I know this is a story about me, but I really want to tell about this story that there is someone in Invercargill who used to be a banker in Indonesia. I know this family from Instagram, to be honest, like from like one of things that I searched for. And then he was a banker in Indonesia. He worked for Domino's in Invercargill right now. One day he was so happy to bring a pizza home to his son, the pizza that he made it by himself, and because it's his son's favorite food, and he never managed to do it in Indonesia because of, I mean, also because of life and because of pizza was expensive as well for his economic before in Indonesia. And then now though he needs to change his identity from a banker to be a Domino's pizza delivery guy, but he's still happy. So it's for me seeing that is a tough life in my opinion already, because they need to start a new life. And I know that this is only one story. I know some people from similar background of countries come here with similar situations, starting a new life with children. I don't have kids, so my life is not that difficult. So life in foreign country can be hard, in my opinion, which I met a lot of people that have a tough life here, but it can also be happier, be like you can be happier and also help to help you to become a better version of your life as well. I think that's what how I describe life in New Zealand. It can be tough, it can be happier. It depends on what mindset you use, but regardless, you will strive. You will become a better person, like person than before, I think, due to all the things that we face. I mean, this is like on behalf of, I don't know, people who come here from the southern, the global south. I can say it diplomatically.
So what advice will you give them to come before they come to New Zealand? What are a few things you will tell them to be to kind of come to New Zealand with, like be prepared with?
I mean, I think again, to be kind to yourself, and then I mean it's because it's I mean I never be kind to myself. I think that's what advice that I will, and get ready for whatever change, because I think you mentioned it that having change in your life, big changes, it's difficult and it's never been easy. So and in the difficult moments, you just want to be kind to yourself. I think that is my suggestions. And a lot of time, it's not about you. It's not on you a lot of time. It's always about the other people as well. I mean, don't take anything, and also don't take anything seriously, maybe.
Okay, I need to, a little bit of elaboration on that. What do you mean, don't take anything seriously?
I don't know when let's say, well, when I feel lonely and I take it seriously that I don't have friends here, I don't know who to call. That's like one of my down moment as well. But then one day it's also fun to talk with a plan, like a house plan. Because they will not complain back to you. That's like one way to take things not seriously. I think like when you are being lonely, talk to whatever, and just make fun of it. I don't know. I just make it up. And also like for example, other thing was when they don't understand whatever that I'm talking about because of my accent, not because of them, but because of my accent is totally maybe different for their ears. A lot of time I took it seriously. I was like, oh, I need to fix my English. I never think that I need to fix my English in my life because I'm fluent already. I think most of people in my international office before, they understood me. And then I took it seriously. Oh, I need to take English course again, maybe here, but then it takes money. So just make fun out of it, then don't take it seriously. I think that is my mantra as well today.
Good. That's a good mantra. Don't take things too seriously
Yeah,
and be
because a lot
kind to
of time it's not
yourself.
about you. Yeah, and you have done enough. You did your part. Yeah, it's easy to say, but believe me, it's so difficult for me to do it.
Yes, I was just going to say that. You probably need to take your own advice here now.
I will keep you updated about it, I think. I don't know.
Oh, things will work out. Hopefully, it'll work out. So I know you said, you've had these moments where you felt like you needed to fix your English and you're not good enough with the job market and all that, and you've had a little bit of a challenge finding those social connections. So do you think you've found acceptance now as you're moving forward in the community with, the work that you're doing with different organizations and having connected to different people?
Yeah. Do you remember the story of going to school by elephant? No, I'm going to school with lion. Do you remember that? One of the participant in the woman leadership course tell the stories of how people who don't know
Oh,
your
yeah.
cultural background put you in a little box. So that story is always like, oh yeah. Make me like accept things that I experience, whatever days that I have, whatever tough days that I have. I always say, ah, yeah, maybe they just think that that kind of elephant in different contexts, you know what I mean? Maybe it's just them. So I just accept, or Like, for example, with my English, I will just, why bother? I accomplished master degree with distinction already without AI, like without AI, because it's been expelled in my department anyway. So like why I bother to learn English again when why I need to prove myself? I don't need any. It's the validation thing as well, I think, for me. Because yeah, acceptance is also something to do with validations, I think. The way I accept myself, I also it's also a little bit tricky sometimes because I have a validation issue, due to tough childhood, tough parentship, parenting, I think. So I think now I can accept. I mean, now I'm trying to be nicer to myself. I'm trying to, okay, I accept that I have different accent. I just need to speak slowly, maybe, speak more obviously, and just, because all of this experience also sometimes make me, I don't know if you experience this or not, but makes me don't want even to talk to them. When we go to a coffee shop and we go to the restaurant, I always ask my husband, "No, you do the talk, you do the order. No, you do the thing, you do the thing." Even to refund something to JB Hi-Fi or to Chemist Warehouse, "No, you do the talk." They will not understand me because I'm too lazy already. But I think acceptance needs also come with diligence. I don't know if you know.
No, I get your point about that. I think, yeah, and it will work, hopefully all work out and will going forward. But we will have to conclude our conversation today, and I'd like to thank you for sharing such deeply about what you are experiencing here. So thank you, Dinda.
Thank you, Afsa.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.